Welcome back, everyone. It's Wednesday on the Damage Report, and thus, just go ahead.
Let's do it. Hey, it's JR Wednesday. Hey, LA Dodgers represent. The new season has begun. It's time for another run. I know this is the Damage Report, but you know what's going to happen? The LA Dodgers are putting in some damage this year. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, everybody's saying they enjoyed my White Sox hat and my whatever hat. This is the real deal right here, just so you know.
If I had to guess, I would say that going forward, 20% of the show will be about the Dodgers from now on, I would assume. Soon, more will be about Game of Thrones. This is just a bit of a preview, but the Friday episode before Game of Thrones final season comes back, we're going to do a couple blocks about me and Brett.
No, this shouldn't happen.
It's just, I'm so excited. I've been rewatching it. I'm on the fifth season.
You're
it's amazing.
You're supposed to tease upcoming events, not get people to not watch it.
Oh, my God. Get out of here. Well, why don't I tease the rest of the show? Let's see. We've got the GOP strategy on healthcare going forward, evolving fast in response to public reaction. We've got that video of Jeanine Pirro that we teased yesterday. We didn't actually end up getting to it. So we are going to talk about it today, as well as Tucker Carlson attacking Ilhan Omar yet again. We've also got two awesome interviews. Dave Leventhal was on the show yesterday. Today, we were breaking down some campaign finances. Today, though, we're going to be talking about the FEC and how effectively no one is watching the watchers when it comes to US elections, and a lot more. A lot of fun stuff. Why don't we jump into it?
Yes.
Donald Trump is losing his mind. There's really just no other way to say it. We want to talk about a couple of the things that happened in a 24-hour period with Donald Trump, any one of which would be the weirdest thing Barack Obama had literally ever done. This is just one 24-hour period that we're going to forget about tomorrow. So the first has to do with he was asked a question about the Barr summary of the Mueller report. And I phrase it that way to remind people that no one yet has seen the actual report. People have forgotten that. Talked about what they think is going to be in it and have now moved on. And we still haven't actually gotten it. But anyway, he was asked about it. And here is what he says he hopes happens going forward.
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings of that investigation about the Mueller report. The Mueller report, I wish, covered the oranges, how it started, the beginnings of the investigation. How it started.
And I think that's the end of the show, because how do you go back to just talking about the news when he repeatedly says oranges?
Okay, so he said oranges 3 times in that clip.
Uh-huh.
Now, the highly edited Media Matters tape that was put out there, because that's always the go-to, even though Media Matters had nothing to do with this particular one. Highly edited tape that cut out the times he said origins, which was once, maybe twice.
He did say origins once.
Yes. He said origins in the middle of that, where it jumped to the net to the third time he did say oranges. Mm-hmm. I don't think that negates the fact that he gets origins confused with oranges. So and then we can give the full sentence, and I would listen to the whole section where he talked about it. So he said oranges, oranges, origins, oranges.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
That sentence you just said, how have we ended up in this position that we have to do this? I don't want to be crazy, and I don't want to seem crazy, but he's forcing me to speak in a way that he's so crazy that anyone who discusses it seems crazy too. What is the rational explanation for what just happened other than some sort of issue with his brain? And especially because he doesn't just go back and forth with 3 oranges and 1 origins. He also sort of pauses before saying it and then ends up on the wrong word. And you'll remember he says, you know, the beginnings. Like, he gets on some level that he's not communicating effectively, but not on a level that lets him stop thinking about fruit.
So he, okay, so I'm glad you brought up the how it started, where it began. Because he explained it 2 different times. What the word origin means on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to explain what origin means unless you're talking to a 5-year-old and goes, oh, that's a big word, Dad. What's origin? So the fact you have to say where it started, origins, where it began, origins, you don't have to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact he has to explain that means he's getting it in his brain. Wait, origin, right? What does origin mean?
Mm-hmm.
Origin means where something started. There's the internal thought isn't happening. What's happening is, as it happens, he has to say it out loud because all the filters are starting to fall apart. The house, the place is on fire, and the walls are coming down. Don't touch the door because it's hot before you open it, because the blaze might hit you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's happening in his brain. And did you see the White House?
You mean the grapes might hit you.
I remember learning that as a kid. There's a fire in the house. Don't open the hot door. Touch it first, see if it's hot. Because if you open it, there's a blaze about to hit you. Anyway, did you see the White House's official statement about what was said?
Why don't we look at the official statement right now? So the person who writes this down has to deal with him. And so this is what they landed on. Usually they just lie. Usually they just fix it and say that that's what he said. But in this case, I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges. So if you're listening to the podcast, they have spelled it O-R-I-N-G-E-S. And then they've corrected it to origins. And so you see, he gets origins. Then he goes back to oranges, origins. And so the person doing the transcript has tried to, I guess, help him by making it not the fruit, but still pointing out that it's nonsensical that he couldn't get to the right word.
I think it might be worse. So if we're gonna buy the official transcript from the White House that he said oranges, O-R-I-N-G-E-S, I believe.
That's not even a word.
That's not even a word. So at least if we think he's saying oranges the fruit, that means he's saying an English word. Oranges, that spelling that you made up, means he's making up words in the middle of a sentence that don't mean anything.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you should go with he was mistaken rather than he's coming up with words because he's losing his mind. Like, you know, I'm not even saying he's losing his mind. But if I'm going to take your word, your transcript for it, that's a hint that he's losing his mind. Now you're saying it.
Yeah. I think he's going bananas, actually. I think that's what's going on.
It's just losing a grasp on normal sentence structure and vocabulary.
Yeah, and so look, to some extent, we're kind of joking a little bit. And I know a lot of people have been in the last day since it happened. But it's not really a joke. It's not the end of the, this is not the worst thing. I mean, he says things he means to say every day that are far worse.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not a good sign. It's not a good sign. With that, why don't we move on to some other stuff that happened yesterday. Okay. Donald Trump accidentally birthered himself yesterday when he said this. He was talking about Angela Merkel of Germany. He says, I have great respect for Angela and I have great respect for the country. My father is German, was German, born in a very wonderful place in Germany. So I have a very great feeling for Germany.
What country could he be talking about?
Yeah, I think he's talking about Germany. The issue is that his father was not, and we know this because he's made this mistake so many times. His father was not born in Germany. His father was born in the United States. And again, like I tweeted, which is weirder? To not know where your father was born, what country or continent your father was born on, or to lie about it after knowing? And I don't know which of those two is actually is a better explanation. I mean, the thing is, some people might respond and say, maybe he means his grandfather. Because his grandfather was born, I believe, in Bavaria. So sort of the same thing. Mm-hmm. But he keeps saying father over and over. This isn't the only time. He's been doing this for literally years. You should know where your dad was born.
There's confusion here. My father was born in a barn in the middle of the country in St. Louis, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And the reason I remember that is because he has a weird St. Louis accent. And he says born in a barn. So it sounds like the same word. I'd never forgotten that. I'm not sure where my grandfather was born, his father, but I know it wasn't in a barn. Mm-hmm. It's just, you just know these small things. So if you're confusing your grandfather with your father, that's a problem with just your cognizance of what's going on in the world. I get it. But this is like, this is a revelation to his birther issue, potentially. Someone should ask him, hey, were you confused also with the last president?
Mm-hmm. Maybe he was thinking his great-granddad. I don't know.
Maybe he's confusing Obama's his ancestors with him.
Yeah.
Because apparently they're all the same. They're all born in the same place.
Do you want to know the level that's even weirder? So now he's saying his dad is from Germany, even though his dad's from the US or whatever. But for a very long time, he also thought his dad was born in the US, but not in Germany. Trump claimed to be of Swedish heritage until at least 1987. He wrote in The Art of the Deal that his grandfather had come to the US from Sweden. That's the grandfather that was born in Germany or thereabouts. And apparently his father also made up his Swedish ancestry after World War II so that he would have an easier time selling apartments to Jewish buyers. But like, so he made that up and Trump accepted it, which, okay, if you were raised being told your family's from Sweden, I guess you would accept that. But then how does it go back to being from Germany? This is a ridiculous thing for us to have to talk about, but he doesn't appear to know. And again, this is a case where, like, it's one thing to parrot a lie that you've been told as a kid, mm-hmm. but to end up as a fully grown man with no idea where anybody that around you came from and to continually switch it based on the context is bizarre behavior. And again, goes to the idea that his brain might be melting out of his ears right now.
It's one of those things where you buy into your own lies so long that whatever it is you make up is true. Like, in his world, let's just say whatever fits my narrative right now. He's talking to someone where apparently his sentence is better taken if his father was born in Germany, because mm-hmm. he's just having a conversation about Germany. So, hey, forget it. My dad was born in Germany because I need that right now. Tomorrow when I'm talking in Sweden, hey, sure, my dad was born here too. Whatever you guys need. Mm-hmm. It's just the world adapts to whatever he says in his mind.
We're going to go over by a couple minutes just because I want to show this last video. One of my biggest issues with Donald Trump recently has been his demonizing of renewable clean energy. And so saying that, for instance, you shouldn't have wind energy because then if you want to watch TV some night, the wind's not blowing. That's dumb, but he's found something even worse. Listen.
All happened over the last 2 years. Big difference. Hillary wanted to put up wind. If you have a windmill anywhere near your house, congratulations. Your house just went down 75% in value. And they say the noise causes cancer. You tell me that one, okay? You know, the thing makes it so. And of course, it's like a graveyard for birds. If you love birds, you'd never want to walk under a windmill because it's a very sad, sad sight. It's like a cemetery. We put a little.
Yeah, that was the most powerful person in the country talking before the NRCC, I believe it was. So talking to candidates who will be running to join elected government. For what windmill goes? That's like a British ambulance, I think. Did he go to London and learn all the wrong lessons?
Okay.
And then, of course, there's the substance of it. He is saying that windmill noise causes cancer. Or maybe he's not. Maybe he's joking, because it's a totally cool situation to be in where when the president speaks about the future of an industry, you have no idea if he's trolling you or not.
He read it on a conspiracy site somewhere.
He probably did. Just really fast, in case you believe crazy conspiracies, want to try to stop you on this particular one, you will be shocked to find out that the noise from windmills does not cause cancer, and they're also basically silent. But even if they were, they don't cause cancer. You know what does cause cancer? Non-renewable energy, actually. While there's no evidence that windmills cause cancer, chemicals and particulates emitted during the processes of extracting and burning fossil fuels have been linked with numerous health ailments, including cancer, and of course things like respiratory illnesses and stuff like that. And he's also trying to convince people that if they're talking about building renewable energy in your area, you better quash it because that might hurt your property values.
I think he got windmills confused with cigarettes.
That's
the problem, is the noise from cigarettes crosses.
Yeah, look.
Those
some
loud
days,
cigarettes.
I want to, so this block is basically done. We've talked about a couple of the things that Donald Trump said that's crazy. I want to stop doing this job. Like, it's not, at a certain point, it's not funny anymore. This is a madman. And it's not like, I'm worried that maybe he will damage the chance that renewable energy will improve in the US in the future. He already raised significant tariffs on solar cell components. This is the person who's dictating our environmental policy.
I guess one last thing. People say the rest of the many Republicans have the same policies and they do it better because they're not as wild. So they fly under a cloak, right? Mm-hmm. This guy's out in the open, so therefore we can dispute it more. Are we changing any of these policies? Once he says these outrageous things, does the general public go, yeah, this is wild. Let's stop believing this. Mm-hmm. It hasn't worked yet. So the whole thing about, oh yeah, man, if Trump is out of office, if Trump leaves, if we determine he's lost his mind, putting in someone else is going to be way worse because we won't see it happening. We already don't see it happening, and it's right in our face. This is more of an indictment on us than it is as a society, than it is on this guy. He's letting us know and we're doing nothing about it.
Yeah, God, we need some Bill Nye, man. Bill Nye, you're our only hope. Anyway, okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, switching up gears. Another scary topic, but one not about the president's brain decaying after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
It seems like the standard operating procedure under Donald Trump across much of the federal government is that there should be no one watching the watchers. There should be no accountability inside of these large and incredibly important organizations. And we've got a particular case study of something like that today that we want to talk about. And to do so, we welcome back to the show, having not been on the show in almost a day, Dave Leventhal, federal politics reporter and senior reporter for Center for Public Integrity. Welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you.
Great to have you here again so soon. And so we want to talk about the Federal Elections Commission, the search to replace the vacant internal watchdog, which became an incredibly dramatic affair. Could you break that down for us?
Yeah, and you know, you wouldn't think that the Federal Election Commission's inspector general position would be a source of great drama for the Federal Election Commission or otherwise. But bottom line is that it's been more than 2 years since they've had anyone in this position. And really what it is, John, is a watchdog for the watchdog. What does the Federal Election Commission do? Well, it's an agency that has been set up for the past 40 odd years to ensure that campaign finance laws in this country are enforced and that they're regulated. But it's an agency with about 350 people in it. And sometimes they make mistakes. Sometimes things don't work well. It's a job of the inspector general to make sure that things are working well. And if there are accusations or allegations of wrongdoing or inefficiency or fraud or corruption, it really falls to them in many cases to go ahead and investigate that and root that out. But basically, there have been just a number of pitfalls and stumbles along the way for a 2+ year period now that has caused not only the inspector general position to be vacant, but for the past 5 months, the deputy inspector general position to also be vacant, which means that the office is effectively non-functional. It can't release reports. It can't do investigations, can't do audits, really can't do anything at all. And we don't have an end in sight, even though when I talked to commissioners, they said the end is near. We'll see about that. And
yeah, they might have meant in a more general sense about the planet. So let's talk about Beverly Davis and her attempts to fill this spot. That was a tumultuous situation as well that actually resulted in her leaving the organization too, correct?
Right. So she was a kind of a mid-level human resources official. And the way that this process works is that you have candidates who come in, they apply for the job, they get vetted initially, it goes to a search committee, and then that search committee makes recommendations to the Federal Election Commission for this very important inspector general job. Well, there was a dispute, and one that lasted several weeks at the FEC back in March, or rather May of last year, where Beverly Davis, this human resources official, was saying, hey, look, there are a whole bunch of people who are not qualified. I'm not going to send them on the process. And a whole bunch of other people got involved and said, no, 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 you should be sending these people forward. And kind of at the heart of this was a staff lawyer for one of the commissioners of the Federal Election Commission. So there was this big to-do, this big round dispute, and it ended with Beverly Davis resigning from the organization and actually pulling down the open job posting on her way out. And as a result of that, because the federal government works in the way that the federal government does, they sort of had to start the search at the FEC from square one, and it delayed what was already a process that had lasted more than a year at that point, many months going forward. So that was just one of the several issues along the way, and they still don't have an inspector general as we have this conversation today.
So I want to end on the stakes. So this position has now been vacant, actually not just one, but two levels deep the position has been vacant. It could take some time before it's filled. Worst case scenario, what might be going on that won't be caught because there's no internal mechanism right now to actually catch it?
Well, for example, there was an issue back in 2017 where the current chairperson of the Federal Election Commission, Ellen Weintraub, there were accusations that she was using her position improperly by making statements against President Donald Trump. There was a conservative organization that made those accusations formally, and ultimately they were investigated by the Inspector General's office. The Inspector General said that Commissioner Weintraub, now Chairman Weintraub, had done no wrong, but if there were accusations against any other commissioner for any other reason, it would ostensibly fall to the Inspector General's office to do it. The Inspector General's office can't do anything right now of that sort, so as a result, those types of complaints, they would just simply not be investigated. There are also other things, too, about operations, about taxpayer dollars being used properly that can't get investigated. And then finally, there are right now 50 recommendations that the Inspector General's office has made for the Federal Election Commission that haven't been responded to or addressed in a way that they're supposed to be. And there are not going to be other ones that are added to that list because, again, the Inspector General's office can't do its job.
Yeah, which sounds bad for the mission statement of the organization, but not necessarily bad for some people who prefer to have no cop on the beat where corruption might be going on. Dave Levendahl, thank you as always for joining us. The full story breaking all of this down is available at publicintegrity.org, and NBCNews.com has also picked it up. So we really appreciate you.
Thank you, John.
We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, Tucker Carlson resumes his war against Ilhan Omar, and Jeanine Pirro is on one. We'll talk about it after this. Fox News is obsessed with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but that does still leave 10% of their time to talk about other things, not substance or anything. Instead, they talk about other representatives like Ilhan Omar. And Tucker Carlson does not like her and what she represents. And here is what he recently said about her.
She does not like Israel. But you've heard next to nothing about how Omar doesn't like this country. Omar dislikes Israel probably more than she dislikes Israel. This doesn't seem to bother anybody. It should. Here's what Omar recently told Vogue Arabia in an interview. She described living in the United States as, quote, an everyday assault. America is so racist and hateful, she says, that she feels, quote, threatened, demonized, and vilified every day. It's difficult for her even to go to work. In many ways, things were easier growing up in a refugee camp in Kenya, she says. Quote, when you're a kid and you're raised in an all-black, all-Muslim environment, nobody really talks to you about your identity. You just are. There is freedom in knowing that you are accepted as your full self, unquote. That freedom, Omar says, doesn't exist in America. So pause and think about that for a second. Ilhan Omar's country collapsed as a child. She lived for years in Kenya in that refugee camp. She may have died there without outside help, but help came from where? From here, America. And this country didn't just welcome Ilhan Omar to America. We paid to relocate her family and many others from a foreign continent purely for the sake of being good people, for altruism. Because no country in history has been as generous as we are to places we have no ties to and no obligation to. We've been kind anyway, because that's who we are.
Okay, so there are at least three different things in there that I want to talk about. One is, I think, the quickest, so I'll do that first. What she was saying there about the experience of growing up in the refugee camp, surrounded by people who had the same religion, same racial background, all of that, and then going to a place where you are attacked for those things, I think is very reasonable and understandable. And I think it should even be kind of understandable for him, because look at how he and the other Fox hosts, who are almost universally white Christians, generally white male Christians, who grew up surrounded by other white people, other Christians, and then now, as adults, they have to see other sorts of people and people who worship other gods and things like that. And they freak out about it. Like, they think, how can she say that she's under assault? Now, here's how they're coming for us.
Absolutely.
Like, that is their whole channel. Now, it's unreasonable because they're not actually under assault and they do make up the vast majority of the people in this country and they have as much rights as any human has ever had in the history of humanity. But the emotional impetus, that he should very much understand that because that is the sort of grievance politics that his show runs on.
Yeah, no, he has to be the victim. And actually, so whenever someone criticizes anyone of his race, gender, and everything, and class of American, it's like they're coming to get us. Mm-hmm. There has to be something behind that. So when someone criticizes what you do and what you say and how you go about things, it doesn't automatically make you the victim. There's a systematic approach to the way people were demonized in our country of all kinds of different groups. And there was power behind it, and it lasts to this day. So you can complain about someone saying, hey, Tucker, you're being a bad guy. Oh, I can't believe it. But if someone points a finger at many minorities in this country, say, you're being a bad guy, and I'm gonna call the police and tell them you're being a bad guy, the police will back up that person mm-hmm. and make sure that bad guy goes away.
Yeah.
That's why we have these false reports. That's why we have the barbecue Beckys and all that, because they have the weaponization of the system behind them to make sure they can take their prejudices and place it on you, and then there's something behind it. There's nothing behind when someone says, hey, Tucker, I don't like you. I'm going to get someone on you. There's no someone to get on him.
Yeah, and he said, like, we were talking during the video, but he's like, she says that she's been vilified. Now, let me continue on my millions of people watching per night show. Let me continue to tell you why she's un-American. She's being vilified. Literally, as he said, it's ridiculous for her to say that she's being vilified. He's vilifying her. But that's the whole thing. Like, they want to use her image and they want to use her critiques of the US to scare people that look and think exactly like Tucker Carlson into the idea that their country is being stolen from them. And look, her saying that, like, there's a lot of hateful people, there's a lot of racism in the country, I get that for some people that's controversial. It's not objectively controversial. There's a lot of hate and there's a lot of racism. And it's not up to Tucker Carlson to decide who loves and who hates our country, when the determination is always based on what is the criticism of our country. If you come from the left and you think that our economy has left behind tens of millions of people, or that the power structures of our government are sort of inherently institutionalized racism, that's hating America. But if you want to make America great again, because it's not great now, that's loving America. And that's the way it works. It's that fundamental hypocrisy that some people's reforms that they want are upholding the best of Americanism. And some people who want to protect those generally that have been most victimized, that is hatred. That's un-American. And it does, I mean, look, it's easy to explain, it's easy to understand, but a lot of people watch shows like Tucker Carlson to never be exposed to that sort of dichotomy.
And there was one last part of that before we go to more of what he said. So when you bring up the issues from the country where Ilhan Omar came from, it's like, we took you and when your country was falling apart. There's issues with many countries. Mm-hmm. Every country, I would venture to say, has issues from some form or another. But then when you say because of issues in your country that caused it to fall apart and maybe you're a refugee because of other situations, means you can't criticize completely different issues in this country. Mm-hmm. Because this country took she and her family in means that they have no issues that are absolutely disconnected from the ones that they were fleeing.
Yeah.
So you can flee a government that's fallen apart, that maybe has corruption from its highest levels, which I'd say we do too. But then once you come here, there's no racial issues in our country. Of course there's. Those are two completely different things. Mm-hmm. So because you're running from one thing, it means that the country that took you in doesn't have any issues.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
And imagine the idea that because you've experienced hardship in your own life and you've seen a country fall apart, you have no authority to speak about concerns that could happen here. No, instead, if you want to critique the US government, you need to be a person like Tucker Carlson. You need to be born into a powerful, wealthy family and have your career handed to you, have millions of dollars handed to you. That's the only way that you have authority to criticize the government and its effect on regular working people. That makes a lot of sense. Oh, also, so he pointed out that we resettled those refugees, which we did, and it's great. And I support more of that. Tucker, do you support more of that? Did you support Syrians being brought over to the US? Or is your party a big fan of that? The president you support so much, are we still that generous country that you were talking about in your fake solemn tone? No, you don't want any more of that. And at the time, you probably would have opposed it as well. Okay, just briefly, Jeanine Pirro's back on TV for some reason, and she came after the Barr summary of the Mueller report came out. She came back on, and so here is how she greeted that news on her first rebroadcast.
When someone lies to you, do you just say, don't worry about it, I'll get over it. Well, that's not how our system works. There has to be accountability. There has to be a consequence. Because as the president himself said, this should never happen again. And I can guarantee you it will happen again. Unless we make an example of the traitorous, treasonous group that accused Donald Trump of being an agent of the Russian government. And as they spewed their hate, I want to know who did the unmasking, who did the leaking. And if we don't have a consequence, if people at the highest level of government are not held responsible for this, it is a blueprint for a future effort to overthrow the government. Don't be satisfied with the Mueller report. This is bound to happen again because these arrogant, lying, condescending, leaking haters of you and me and the America that doesn't have power are going to do it again unless we stop them. And the only way to stop them is with justice, true justice, and that's behind the bars justice.
William Barr, justice. I wanted to hide behind my desk. What? I guess I don't watch enough Fox News. That's not normally how it is it?
For her.
Like, so Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity and all those shows, like, I feel like the way they present things, obviously they have a gigantic slant towards Donald Trump. They don't care about what they're saying is true or false. But like, I think they get that they're not supposed to be like the state propaganda for V for Vendetta. She had the big, like, I don't know why it's ominous, but you know it's ominous. That flag in back of her, that was the scariest part of the whole thing. Not her screaming and threatening to make an example of you. That was horrifying. Like, that's not, my instinct is to say that that's state TV, but that's not state TV because state TV would be too savvy to be that.
Yeah.
That's an audition for something, but I don't know what. That was some scary stuff. Yeah. Like, if the next sentence after we had cut was, that's why we should cut their heads off, would you really be shocked?
I was waiting for it. So execution's next on the menu. What happens is when you have a competition of a bunch of hosts who are trying to get the best favor of the dictator, you have to go over the top. Mm-hmm. You're like, wait a second, I'm falling behind. I was off air for a couple of weeks because, and Mr. President asked for me back, I need to come back and let him know I'm here.
I think that's what it is.
It's allegiance, it's loyalty, it's putting a hand up and saying, I got your back, sir. So I need to come harder and stronger. And then as we go over the top and go over the top, and now next hand he's going to try and go over the top of her. He said, man, Pyrrha only comes on the weekends. And she came with some fire that I didn't have. I need to say something crazier now.
Yeah. That was insanity. But look, he promotes her show at his rallies. He does interviews with her. He'll probably do more. It's a crazy strategy, but it might just work for her. And I just want to briefly mention, because she said you shouldn't be satisfied with the Mueller report. Allow me to remind, because people seem to have forgotten this, she hasn't seen it. Trump hasn't seen it. We haven't seen it. William Barr has seen it. That's it at this point, so far as we know, has actually seen what's in it. And I feel like we've moved 100 miles from there. Everybody thinks they know what's in it. They've already had their celebrations. They're already moving on to other stuff. We haven't seen even 100 words of it yet, which seems significant. And again, it might end up simply agreeing with everything that William Barr said in his interpretation of it. But it's weird that yesterday Donald Trump was implying that we should never see what's actually in it. This 100% exoneration report. He says, why start over by releasing it? It's ridiculous to release it.
Oh, before he said he's okay with releasing it. Let it happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's switching fast. And who knows why? Maybe it's, again, he's trying to change expectations. I don't know. And again, it might come out and it doesn't change the conversation or the narrative at all.
They're controlling the narrative. And if you get more information, other folks can give their takes on it. They don't want that.
It is just bizarre to pretend that we know what's in it because Donald Trump's hand-chosen AG says he knows what's in it. Anyway, maybe it'll come out and Jeanine Pirro will change her tune. We will see. Probably not. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back. The murder of Nipsey Hussle. We've got David Dennis Jr. on to break it down after this. This weekend, LA rapper Nipsey Hussle was shot and killed outside of his clothing store in LA. And joining the show now to break down this terrible situation, writer for The Undefeated, David Dennis Jr. David, welcome back to The Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And so you recently wrote about your immediate reactions and then your thoughts about this senseless murder. When you first found out How did you feel?
Well, I was devastated. I was shocked. You know, Nipsey Hussle is somebody, you know, my background is in hip hop journalism. He's somebody I followed for about more than 10 years, just about. And, you know, I've known his music, but more than that, I've known his, you know, contribution to his community, his business acumen, the stuff he was doing for Crenshaw. So it seemed, you know, it was a shock for sure.
And so you wrote in your piece, there was a line, we lost more than a rapper Sunday. We lost someone who loved us. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so Nipsey Hussle made, you know, he had a successful rap career. He made tons of money. He went out for, you know, business ventures for himself that were very lucrative and sort of changed the music industry. But, you know, it seemed like almost every dollar he made, he pumped back into his community. He was known for, you know, he built schools. He was always giving to kids in the area. He was trying, he was paying for funerals, paying for shoes. He had built a co-op space in the area for STEM research and for, you know, co-work areas. He was investing in real estate. You know, he seemed to be, you know, sort of perfecting the blueprint of what we want from celebrities in terms of giving back to their communities, you know, perpetuating the things that we've seen celebrities do in the past, but he was doing it in some really sort of revolutionary, meaningful ways.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I had not been familiar with him or his work before this. And so I've been sort of learning about him and his life since it happened. And it seems like, obviously, you know, you tend to hear the good stuff, but it seems like everybody who interacted with him had an amazing experience, including, I mean, look, there's some famous people and all that, but just regular people that interacted with him, you know, as he was working at his shop and things like that. And that work that you were describing there apparently was continuing right up until when he died. He had a meeting planned with the LAPD to talk about gang violence. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so, you know, the Crenshaw area is, you know, struggling with gang violence, as are many different places in the country. And so he had sort of formed an alliance with different members of the community and the LAPD in order to sort of curb some of that gang violence that was going on and sort of build some programs that would sort of help the kids in that area. And that was planned literally, you know, 24 hours after he died.
So just one or two more quick questions. So in your piece, you talked about an MIT study that said that effectively, if you're born into poverty and you want to escape it, you need to have a period of 2 decades of absolutely everything working out for you, you know, no transgressions of any sort. And in your article, one of the quotes you have is that Nipsey escaped poverty, but he couldn't escape America. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so the MIT study was essentially looking at things from a financial perspective. Like if you need to not ever default on any loans or make any bad business decisions in order to, you know, move up the ladder financially. And you need 2 decades of that. But I think it goes a little bit deeper for African-Americans, especially people who are in impoverished neighborhoods like Nipsey came from. I mean, the past is sort of always there coming for you no matter what. And so it appears as though this was an altercation with somebody at the store who may have come from, you know, that past. And you look at, you know, a lot of famous black folks, for you know, who just have to deal with that stuff. I mean, you look at Meek Mill, who is fighting jail and fighting charges from things he did when he was 19. So you have to sort of go beyond financial perfection and, you know, to really escape. And Nipsey also was still a product of America, and America does not is not really a place for black folks, and definitely not black, you know, rich black people.
So my last question, for people who want to help keep his memory and his legacy alive, what would your advice be for them?
Well, my advice would be to, you know, live as he lived. I don't know if you saw TMZ this morning reported that he was at the store because he was providing clothes for somebody who had just gotten out of jail for after being in jail for 20 years. So that's why he was there in the first place. And, you know, he was giving back up until the moment that he died. And I think that is his legacy. And I think that's what we can do carrying forward. We can always remember where we came from. Don't be scared of the places we came from. Give back and, you know, have hope and faith in the people who you were raised around.
David Dennis Jr., thank you as always for joining us. We really appreciate your perspective and what you said about Nipsey Hussle.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, the GOP strategy on healthcare evolving fast over the past week. We're going to take a look at the most recent stance they're taking after this. So last week it was revealed that Donald Trump and his administration, and because it's Donald Trump, the Republican Party, their approach to healthcare would once again be attempting to destroy the ACA, throwing more than 30 million people off of their health insurance, ending protection for pre-existing conditions, and all of that, despite all of Donald Trump's promises that he was going to have universal healthcare as president. It was going to be much cheaper, much better. They decided, no, we're just going to go back to repealing it and maybe replacing it with something someday. We don't appear to have a plan. We've only had 12 years to come up with one. How could you expect us to be done yet? But there was a lot of negative backlash to that. People don't like the idea of being left to suffer and die without health insurance, it turns out. And so he's decided, you know what, we're going to amend that plan just a little bit. Here he is talking about it.
Essentially, what I'm saying is we're going to come up with a health care plan. We're not going to vote on it until after the election. We'll all promise it's going to be our first vote because we blew it the last time. Man, I was fed a bill of goods. I want to tell you, some of you, I'm still a little bit angry, but not all of you. Wasn't even your fault. But we should have done it when we had the position. But we're going to get it back. And it's going to be a better plan. But this is going to be something, I think, that has even more potential. It's going to be a better plan. I already know what they're doing with it. And we're going to use it. We're going to campaign on that plan. And it's so much better than Obamacare. Now, here.
By the way, that last line, it's so much better than Obamacare, is the most detailed information about the plan that we have so far. And you pointed out, like you made a noise while he's talking, when he's like, it's going to be so much better. I already know what's in it. Like, that is projection. There's no plan. He doesn't know what's in it. That's why the most specific thing he can say is it's better and cheaper. He's been saying that for years.
Yeah, there's no way you can know what's in something that hasn't been created. Because they've already said they don't know what they're doing with it, and they have no plan. So yeah. It's a constant. If you give a lot of vagueness, you don't have to give any details and say it's going to be this, it's going to be that. I've said it many times. I remember I gave up on politics in, I think it was fifth grade when I ran for treasurer in student council. And the kid who beat me, I was like, we're going to do this. I had structure and agenda. This kid said, free pizza parties, longer recess. I said, this is ridiculous. What? So you give general vague things. Mm-hmm. It still works from fifth grade all the way up to the presidency.
Which class president elementary school has ever been allowed to stretch recess?
That's what I said.
Nobody's been allowed to.
I was like, you can't do that.
Then you're not an idealist. Okay, so, and also, we're gonna vote on it after Election Day. That's like 2 years away almost. Like, how much of an admission is it that no one is gonna like your plan if you ever come up with one, that we're not even going to like reveal it for 2 years effectively? And look, there's a reason I think they're backtracking. Nobody's buying it. Nearly 60% of voters say that they don't have a lot of trust or any trust at all in Trump when it comes to healthcare issues, possibly because he lies constantly. On the other hand, a majority of voters, 53%, have a lot or some trust in Democrats to protect the healthcare system or enhance current policies because, well, primarily they're not trying to get rid of it. That's one thing. But we've been trying to drive home. They want to throw 30 million people off their health insurance. And I think that Donald Trump is hearing that criticism because take a look at the most disingenuous political statement of the week comes in this tweet where he says, everybody agrees that Obamacare doesn't work. Premiums and deductibles are far too high. Really bad healthcare. Even the Dems want to replace it, but with Medicare for All, which would cause 180 million Americans to lose their beloved private health insurance. That's disingenuous doesn't cut it. You need to come up with a new word. Like, oh, you think I'm throwing people off? They're throwing people off by giving them other health insurance. And yes, people like health insurance. They don't love the privateness of their health insurance. That's not what, that's ridiculous. But honestly, that's not that far afield from what some Democrats do in attacking Medicare for All.
Yeah, it's everything that he said. This is on every subject that he talks about is based in believing him over the reality. So if he calls your private insurance beloved, then suddenly it's beloved. Mm-hmm. You know, suddenly if Democrats are throwing everyone off of health insurance, suddenly it's just them. It's only based, that's why you have to have a deity type of relationship with him, because no matter what he says, he's right.
And it'll work for the base, but a lot of people don't trust him on those issues. I mean, you remember during the campaign, he was saying like, we're gonna pay for it, universal health care. Man, how fast he fled from that. Don't trust Donald Trump. That's an easy lesson to learn after all this time. Okay, so that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, Jarrah. Great to have you on. Thank you everybody for watching. We'll be back tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.